If you read the title of this episode, you have a vague idea of where we're going. Little do you know, the title is literal, and at the end, you might reach nirvana and become a shiny pearl. It's Open Loops. Hello, everybody. Greg Bornstein here. Consciousness disruptor. Cultural hypnotist. Curator of experience. Looper. And welcome to your favorite late night talk show. For the shamelessly fringe, it's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. This is a show where we go into the topics that take us away from it all. Hypnotism, magic, the paranormal, the supernatural, the mystical, the esoteric, the philosophical, the taboo. Really, the deepest questions of them all. Who and what we really are. Because an open loop is just that. It's an unconscious provocation. It's a thing that causes you to go inside and make you seek answers about yourself, about the world. My goal in this show is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and force you to step into the highest version of yourself. Now, my guest today, Ambika Devi. I love this woman dearly. I really do. She, more than just being a magician extraordinaire, really well-versed in meditation, in tarot, in hypnosis, in all things magical, mystical. She really has it all. What I love about Ambika is that she isn't afraid to be provocative. In this interview, you will hear us almost at times challenging each other in a very light, fun, but expansive way. She's provocative. She's opinionated. She's an incredible storyteller. But most importantly, she's fun. Very fun. This will not be the last time we have Ambika on this show, just because any guest that brings up people that combust spontaneously, they automatically become a repeat guest. That's part of my agreement with you as an audience. I've said it since the very beginning. Spontaneous combustion always gets a free pass. Now, of course, there's a lot more than that to this. We're talking about grounding spirituality. We're talking about different ways of the world working when you come from that inner awareness. We even talk about Salvador Dali. This episode is looping to the extreme. Ambika is a looper. This reminds me of my early episodes when I used to call this a theme park for your intellect and imagination. You're ready to go on the ride? It is a blast. Now, if you enjoy Open Loops, please make sure to follow it on Apple Podcasts, as well as give the show a 5-star rating. Leave a few words. I would greatly, greatly appreciate any review you left. It really helps get these conversations out there. This episode, one of my favorite interviews, really is. Ambika Devi. Today, on Open Loops, we have Ambika Devi, an international award-winning best-selling author, meditation Jedi, astrologer, speaker, and wizard. I'm pretty sure she's a yogi, a shaman, a psychic, all sorts of different things. We're a hypnotist. We're going to go into all of it. Ambika, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Greg. Wow. You get me.
Do you think
and that's such a blessing when somebody's interviewing me. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's nice to hear. You know, I'm curious to...
You picked up on stuff, you know?
Well, for you to be in all of this and to be in it, I mean, you do so much. You've done so much. I mean, we're talking TED Talks, we're talking writing multiple books, like I mentioned. You teach at this wizard school. You do a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question for you. Was there a moment when you awakened?
Nobody's awake yet, Greg.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Let me just, you know, pop that bubble.
Okay, great. That's fair. That's fair.
So
then what's the difference
human,
between everyone else and you, I guess, in terms of your level of consciousness?
Well, I think if we're trying to weigh that out, we have a path called Dharma, and that denotes our true nature. And if we're following our true nature, then we're happier, we're more harmonious. And as an astrologer, when I try to explain this, because people want to know, what's my chart say about me? But it's really, you know, it's your potential and what you're given. And then as your astrologer, it's my job, if you want something in your life, to help you figure out how you can, even if it looks like that's not really one of your great strengths. But when we can key into what are our great strengths, and what's going to click and feel more fluid for us, then we have an easier time moving forward. Everybody suffers. That's part of being human. Everybody has challenges. Everybody has high points and low points. Mm. And we have moments and flashes, but that is not awakening. That's kind of like when it's really pitch dark and there's an ominous kind of tempest storm. And, you know, it's just like out there, and then crack, the lightning goes and you can see everything for a moment. You get those flashes. But then when you come out of that moment, are you still awake all the time in every moment? Are you constantly able to watch and witness everything that's going on? That's the true awakened state. You can't stay there for too long. You expire the body. Have you heard any of those stories of the monks who self-combust?
No, please tell me about this. This is great already. This is great. I have so many questions, but you're leading me. I want to know about this. Tell me about the monks.
We'll get to all of it. So I was living in Arizona, and I met a Rinpoche. A Rinpoche is a high lama. It's a high lama. So we're talking about Dalai Lama tradition, Tibetan Buddhism. And I was involved with the yoga community. And a Rinpoche was sent by Dalai Lama to Scottsdale, Arizona, to find a place, to start a center, to start teaching. And there were people, friends of mine, who were very, very devout followers. So they're very, very devout and very philanthropic to that whole lineage. And the Rinpoche wanted to get these relics from Tibet. And we know what's going on politically over there. Well, they found their way to the US. They found their way. And he was so elated that in Chandler, Arizona, at a brand new auditorium for a library that was built, he decided he would host a Shaktipat ceremony. Shaktipat is in many different traditions where the teacher or the guru or the more senior monk or the Dalai Lama maybe touches your forehead or with a feather or an object or a scarf or, you know, there's many different ceremonies that will do this. But these were relics of very, I don't even know if famous is the right word to use, but powerful, I think, monks and lamas and the Buddha, the Gautama Buddha's relics. And they're housed in these crystal objects that some are like little domes and some look like magic wands, you know, with the relics. And the relics themselves look like pearls, not round, perfect pearls, but maybe polished pieces of abalone shell. And some are very white and iridescent, and some are all the way to the color black, like pearls. And the story goes that when the being that was in a human body reached that moment of awakening and enlightenment, they self-combusted, and that's those remnants were what were left on the pillow.
Wait a minute. All right, so this actually
so didn't you see Spinal Tap? Where do you think they got the idea?
Wait a minute. So this is very positive. You're telling me that if we were to really go all the way up, we're going to go out.
Not everybody can self-combust. This is actually a conscious decision.
What? Who decides? Is that something they were thinking? I'm like, okay, I'm done.
I let you all peek in I let you all peek into a deep part of mysticism.
Yeah, wait, how much deeper does it go?
Oh, it goes way deeper. But the thing is, Rinpoche
okay.
was very, Zajoche was his name, Zajoche Rinpoche. He was so elated that he wanted to give everybody a bop on the head with the Buddha's remains. Buddha's remains. And what it did to me, I'm sure that's your question, of like, what did it feel like? What did it do? First of all, there was a display, an artistic display of all the other relics.
Yeah.
And these incredibly beautiful artistic creative objects and many, many, many relics of former humans in these pearl shaped things with in jewel cases. And you can't even imagine. Hopefully you can find something online so you can find pictures to show or look up for yourselves. And the sensation was an overwhelming sense of compassion and love. And I don't remember finding my way from in front of him back to my seat. And I had gone there with a friend of mine, and we just fell into each other's arms and cried for about 45 minutes.
Now, wait, now, were you already in
I don't really know why.
Were you already in a regular spiritual practice at this point? Was this something?
Oh, yes, I have been since I was six. But I was invited there by means of several channels. There were probably over 200 people there. It was a pretty large gathering. Not huge, but
yeah. Are you from Arizona originally?
No, I'm not, but I lived there for 10 years.
I was going to say that is a very mystical place already. I'm not surprised that that happened there.
Me either. Me either at all. And my time in Arizona was definitely mystical, you know, between Sedona and so many different really cool places, you know, finding crystals in Diamond Point near Payson and all around Sedona is just amazing. And then Bisbee down below Tucson. It's a really interesting state. I highly recommend it for a visit.
But wait a minute. Self-combusting monks for a second. This is...
I took a risk with that one.
I know you did, but it's good. But it's good. But it's a good risk because here's my question then about, you know, enlightenment, this whole mystical idea of nirvana.
That's true.
Right. Do we... There are two ways of self-combusting that I'm aware of. There's the terrorists, like suicide bombers going in and destroying, which is totally different.
From the inside. Okay, so the heat and the fire, the Agni, which is the word for the Lord of the fire, the Deva of fire and that element, but also for fire itself, that is... from the tapas, which is spiritual fire. So it's the spiritual fire that burns.
Yeah,
Greg, you know the sculptures and the paintings and it looks like flames around them?
Yeah.
Think of Tibetan paintings. Yes, that's what it is.
That's like the kundalini energy, just that full, turn it up past 11.
That's when it,
final tap.
That's when
keep
it
going.
Truly pierces through all the chakras, because we earthly beings, we relate to the five elements and I'll do this chakra sequence from the root. So earth, water, fire, air, space, right? Space is, and then the elements are formed the other direction. Space, friction of space makes air, friction of air makes fire, friction of fire makes water, friction of water makes earth. So we don't have any control over pushing Kundalini through the third eye. We can only really work with elements that we can work with. I know a lot of people are gonna get all pissy about this, but At that point, you let go. You're not in control. If you're truly in the witness state, you are not the doer. So the consciousness is anchored in the throat in Vishuddha chakra. And there are two chambers in the third eye and then the crown chakra. I know there's all these systems with other chakras, but people, please just focus on the root chakra, on connecting to each other.
Doesn't
that make more sense? To really, really say, I am connected to everything. Everything is interconnected. Everything is alive. Which actually, the words of Cicero are the motto of Gray School, where I teach, which is probably what caught my eye. And I thought, I could teach at this place, because I really resonated with it, which is everything is alive. Everything is interconnected.
Can I just ask you this one thing? I know you want to.
No, it's okay.
She might want to move on from the monks self-combusting. She might want to move on. Here's my question for you. Would you be okay if that was the way you went? If that was it.
Wow. Okay, so I study the Bhagavad Gita. Have you ever heard of the Bhagavad Gita?
Oh, of course. I did a play and played J. Robert Oppenheimer in college. So I very familiar. Yes.
Well, he didn't write it.
He didn't write it, but he was a big fan of it and he quoted it. And if we believe the play.
So you learned some that way. Okay.
He felt guilt over. I mean, yeah, he did. You could see clips of him saying, I'm become death destroyer of worlds. He's out there. He was a fan.
It's 18 chapters and it's part of the Mahabharata, which is a huge epic.
Yes.
And the Bhagavad Gita is three sections of six chapters, 18 chapters. And the middle six are all about how to die. You want more info? Just go there.
Okay. Look.
It's all there. All you have to do is read Swami Sachchidananda's or read Swami Shivananda's. Those are more modern of good trusted ways to interpret it.
I love these cryptic answers you give me. This is the true. We don't know if we're going to be holding pearls of Ambika at some point, but you might be lucky enough. You'll find them on QVC or something. No, wait a minute. So, no, hopefully not. Hopefully not there. It should go for far more. Now, wait a minute. We're talking about mysticism. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Kundalini. We're talking about the chakras.
We didn't really talk about, well, we did. You're right. We did talk about.
Well, here's my question about the root chakra. What do you think? You said that's the one we should all be focusing on. What do you think the world looks like if people are more in their root chakras? What do you think day-to-day interaction with fellow human
beings? I think we'd be way more awake about our connection to the earth and what we're doing. And I think we'd be way more harmonious. We'd be more grounded. It is the essence of that. We would feel like we are one tribe and stop this nonsense of this tribe, that group, that, you know, it's one group, people. But I post this every once in a while on social media, Greg, of like, maybe something comes up about UFOs and I always wonder, like, okay, so what if, you know, you look out and the news is all blasting, you know, we're being invaded from another realm. We don't know what that is. Even the hidden part of what's going on or whatever doesn't know what that is. So truly, we're in this together on this blue rock, right? Would they get it? Would they get that we're all connected? And we're connected to the earth,
right?
Or not. So that, you know, unless you can riddle me that,
Well, what do you think about the?
Are we acting and behaving that way? I don't think we are.
Right.
I really don't.
Well, do you think they're not going to come? I mean, look, I was just part of this 5-day disclosure conference, total disclosure, and really the conclusion of it was that they are definitely not showing up if we don't raise our consciousness. There's no way that we're going to experience whatever it is. I mean, look, extraterrestrial, it could mean so many things anyways, but really it was pointing towards the inner disclosure before the outer one, or at least a commingling of both of them. Here's my question for you. Do you think we need to connect to the root before we experience the magic from above?
Of course. The only things that can grow from the sky are you know, a few species of trees. And I mean, we're all connected to the earth.
Have you seen a UFO?
Oh, heck yeah, in Arizona. Well, even in Pennsylvania. Yeah, lots and lots. Oh, in the Virgin Islands when I lived there. Yes. Many, many.
I know, and you have, I mean, you definitely, you have a book, right, about...
Not about UFOs, though.
Something about, oh, well, you write for My Indigo Son, and I guess that's sort of a reference to, I mean, people talk about indigo children and rainbow children and stuff like that. But look, I still don't... we need to get back to awakening. You're making my conscious mind circle and circle and circle, and which is great because you know what? I know this is what you do. You are very much about waking up,
connecting
the
everything. You know,
waking
weaving
up the creation,
it, weaving it in together, and making some sense of it. You know, people love to brand things and make up new names for stuff. Supermoon, you know, how about some astronomy people? Perihelion, aphelion, you know, okay, so it makes it more fun for social media and things like that. And I'm sure back when we were cave people sitting around a fire and grunting out stories, we were coming up with cool names. We had to keep each other amused, you know?
Yeah. Were you always a consciousness disruptor?
Yes. I didn't even have to wait a moment to answer that.
Yeah, I love it. Well, wait a minute. So you said you're six. You learn meditation. Yeah, that's right. You did have some. I saw one of your YouTube videos. You were talking about you were 6 years old when you learned meditation. Where did that take you internally?
Just really trusting quiet. And that's interesting. I used to really enjoy, this happened to everybody in a meeting for worship at a Quaker school. So every week the entire school gets together and sits quietly in what's called a meeting house. It's not really like a church, but traditionally they were built out of stone, so thick stone walls. And that gives kind of a dark kind of, you know, the feeling of a very, like a thick stone wall barn, if you've ever
Yeah.
been in something like that. And you walk in and really big, thick, wood doors and dark mahogany kind of looking benches with red corduroy cushions. Doesn't look very, very comfortable, but somehow they are. I don't, these benches, I guess we found a comfortable spot, or they didn't look very, contoured. And
Yeah.
but it just became such a sanctuary of peace. Wednesday morning. Okay, so think about a Monday through Friday week, whether it's a work week or a school week. And Tuesday mornings, we all sang for an hour. All different kinds of songs. It was like a sing-along. And Wednesday mornings, we went and we were quiet. What a cool contrast. These are practices that I became very interested in because I noticed how it made me feel, and how it changed my mood or physical energy and everybody around me. And then, so I became curious about this as I moved through life. And when I would experience things that would give me a different sensation, a heightened level of happiness, whatever, calm, peace. I was then introduced to yoga class and Shavasana at age 9. So then I kind of put it together because in Shavasana for the first time, lying on my back after doing yoga for whatever period of time, an hour, hour and a half. The very first time I was in Shavasana, I was gone and it was so easy. And I think it was because for the previous years, I had been sitting every Wednesday morning during the school year. And so I became contemplative. I would go out and sit against a tree. I would go out and sit in a meadow,
That's amazing at such a young age to
Go
have
sit by a
that
creek
experience.
or a river, just really enjoy nature too. And the school, the Quaker schools really afforded me that. We were out in nature quite a bit every day. We had ponds to skate on. We had ceremonies in a big grove with giant ancient pine trees. And this grove and this property had belonged to William Penn. I mean, this was history I was sitting on.
Yeah, you know, nobody talks about the Quakers in this way that often that I've heard. I mean, I definitely have to say, even Ambika, I remember in high school when they're teaching American history, they talked about the Quakers and this idea of a group of people sitting around, and then if you felt the impulse to speak, you'd stand up and start talking. And I remember thinking back then, oh, that's a little weird, that's kind of different, that's strange, but is that not
It's
an
kind of
original
awesome.
version of, yeah, following intuition? This idea that this religious format supported this respecting an impulse and a spiritual impulse, it's something that's overlooked. What do you think the Quakers were tapped into?
Nature. I think they were tapped into their true nature. And the cool thing, I think when you read or hear about it that way, you can think, well, it's like gophers popping up all over the place, disturbing the
Yes.
silence. But there could be times where nobody said anything. There could be times where somebody whipped out a cello and played a beautiful solo or a
Yeah.
flute. There could be a spontaneous poetry or the reading of something classic and just a deep thought, but it was there was a lot of space in between. So I don't ever recall more than maybe three things in a 1 hour period. And then later I went to boarding school and we did 2 hours on Sundays also. And
interesting.
I remember a lot of times sitting out in nature and just having peace, time, aloneness. I think I've never been afraid of being alone. Truly. And I mean, find me people who can really say that. Like, and I'm not talking about alone in the house or living alone, which really I have no problem with, but I'm talking also like walking down a dark, dark street or alley, which may sound crazy, but really I don't feel afraid there. Okay, I did train in martial arts years ago, so
right.
You know, there's that, but I know there's a lot of people that are afraid. I've lived a bunch of places. I was living in Pennsylvania and I had a neighbor who moved from Texas from a more urban area. And this was out in the country. I was in an old stable, living in an old stable, you know, few and far between were the dwellings. And it was new moon time. So there wasn't much light in the sky. And I wanted to go put the trash out. And my neighbor was freaking out that I wasn't using a flashlight. And I like the darkness. And people are afraid of that. They're afraid of the darkness. They're afraid and they're too judgy of what's going on when they're trying to meditate, when really meditation is a state of being. It's not a location. It's not a focus. There's different things that involve that, that can help you find the state. And there are many things that can trigger the state. You had said when we were chatting earlier, I think before we started recording, that you had noticed something, or might about have been trances? A conversation I had earlier about meditation. It was a conversation earlier with somebody.
It's totally fine.
I'm thinking, why are you doing that? But I think I've been interviewed too many times today.
Your timelines are collapsing on me. It's fine. That's good. That's good. No, look, I mean, I certainly am in love with the trance state. I mean, I think... Mm-hmm. That is, and to get into a great trance state requires very much silencing the critical mind, the egoic mind in some ways, and really being. It's something I'm not. I know I need to become more practiced in meditation. That is a. It is something I think I can definitely tap in the presence when I'm with people if I choose to, but the idea of sitting quietly by myself and just the impatience, it gets me. It gets me. Yeah, what is the way to strengthen that muscle?
Okay. Yeah, that's really hard, Greg. So if you can do that, I commend you, because having a launch point, you know, having some techniques to launch you. So I have a lot of students that say to me, wow, I'm so glad that you taught me that physical movement and exercise can be a launch point for meditation. Of course it can. This is why athletes tell us they're in the zone, right? The zone. What zone? The meditative zone.
Right.
And they come out of doing a performance, you know, or something at a competition like the Olympics. And, you know, the microphones are on them and people are asking them, oh, how did this, you know, feel that one turn or that? And they're like, I don't know, because they're still coming back. Go easy on them at that point. And it's actually the moments when you come out of that zone, that trance zone, where you lose yourself and the physical body is moving and you're witnessing that, when you come out of it and you're starting to realize that, I'm in this body, that's when you get the flashes. That's when you think you're awake. That's when that lightning strikes for a moment.
Oh, that sounds like a great place to be. Or at least experience.
Well, there's different ways to do it. Are you familiar with Salvador Dali, the painter?
Of course. Love him.
Have you read about his techniques and what drove him to be him?
I'm not even too familiar. I need to delve more into it.
Oh, okay, good. So he would sit to sleep and he would hold a china teacup in a saucer in one hand and a silver spoon in the other. And when the spoon fell out and hit the china, he would come back and start creating. So he was triggering lucid dreaming. So think about it. You've been on a plane, right? Have you been on a long plane where you've slept, but you didn't really sleep? You kind of knew you were still on the plane, but you were aware of certain things, but you could have maybe traveled a little bit and dreamt a little bit. And that's a really good way to trigger lucidity. And so with guided meditation, often people fall asleep, you know, that's why it's popular, because people are getting more rest using it. And that's what it's for. And I have a guided meditation podcast, Meditate with Ambika. You can go listen to it everywhere, all the platforms for free, just enjoy it. And so people like that because it will put them to sleep, but they get frustrated with guided meditation because they don't feel like they're either getting the thing they're looking for or, you know, trying to squeeze a manifestation out. And really what that's for is to just relax you. And it's actually quite difficult and challenging to get into the true meditative state while listening to any kind of entertainment, mind entertainment. It can happen, but for the brain waves to all be firing so that you're in that balance point between alpha and theta, where you are fully awake and aware and fully witnessing, but the body is completely relaxed. Now, that is the meditative state, and it's hard to do sitting up. But when people want to try and experience it, and they've been falling asleep consistently in yoga nidra, guided meditation, creative visualization, I suggest leaning against a wall, sitting, so that, but a lot of people can fall asleep in that position too. So it's a difficult one for that. I find to just use pranayama, which are breathing exercises, and learning how to use the proper tones and sounds and use your own voice, that will launch you the quickest. And I've been researching this for years. So my PhD research has been in, my dissertation challenge is simple. I want to teach meditation to people so that they know that they are, meditating. That's it. So I've been researching all kinds of techniques for years.
To know that they are, that's interesting. What do you think is...
And it's not just in this state of meditation, but it's like also your true being. Really, the goal, if there is a goal of meditation, is self-realization, right? That's awakening, realizing that you are not this body, that you are not really a gender, or there's a day, or there's a time of day, and you don't know that you are, because there's only one being and we're all connected, root chakra. You see how that all works?
But at the beginning, right, you said that this idea of no one's awake, or no one can be, because you get little flashes.
You can awaken. Okay, there can be awakened beings.
Okay. Well, so let me go back
on that one. But I mean, true enlightenment and nirvana. You brought that up earlier.
Yeah.
Like really, like last lifetime, I'm done. I'm fully realized. I'm launching out of here. I'm either leaving pebbles on a pillow, you know, I'll be paraded around with my eyes wide open, and then I'll be burned, and I'll, you know, be sainted or whatever.
That happened too,
but there
right?
There are awakened beings. Of course there are. You know, I mean, there are many, and they're from all different walks of life, but they don't necessarily have a YouTube channel, And so awakened is really fully connected and really functioning from all of these five elements, these first five chakras, and it has awakened, and the consciousness is, but once Kundalini gets up into the third eye and then into, there's only about 72 hours of time. Blast off.
Have you ever met one of these beings, these humans?
I met Swami Vishnu Devananda when I was a kid, and I was named in his ashram in the Bahamas.
When you were a kid, you're okay.
But I didn't get named when I was a kid. I met him when I was nine, but I went back when years and years and years later. But he was already gone. He had already transformed out of this body.
This is, was your family immersed in any of this stuff at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, my mom took me to yoga class, but not deeply, you know, enjoyed. She enjoyed it. And spiritually, I was not forced into a religion. And the Quakers really embrace all. They encourage you to study the world's religions and choose your own spiritual path. So that was a big part of it, because we did study world religions. I mean, by the time I was in sixth grade, I could cross compare mythologies and world religions from all different continents.
Yeah. I just wonder if you have some sort of almost an advantage in a way. And I mean it this way, in the sense that when you grow up, right, they always talk about how people were, well, I didn't choose to be a Christian. I was raised in this way.
That's
and the
right.
fact that you got this experience at six of meditation makes me go, yes, she was indoctrinated, but indoctrinated with the good stuff. No wonder Ambika is this way and in the process of awakening, because it was brought to you in a place where you were still getting your fundamental level of programming. How are we going to catch up to you? Can we?
Well, I guess if anything I'm talking about is inspiring you, if you want to learn from me, I would be delighted to teach you. But, you know, there are many, many great teachers and books to read and things to explore. Listen to elders, definitely.
Right.
Ask elders to tell you stories. And that's something our society just doesn't tap into. And maybe because I grew up with my maternal grandmother in our house, I got some of that. Look, again, the yogis say, and in these stories, like in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita, that we live thousands and thousands and thousands of lifetimes. And
right.
We are experiencing memories from all these past lifetimes. And we're on a dharmic path, and we're experiencing karmas and samskaras, and these are like I'm thinking maybe I should translate a little bit, neural pathways, you could kind of compare it to, you know, like habits. They're with us, sticky, and when you've gotten to a certain point, I guess you get lucky and you get to choose a family that can offer you certain things. But even if you're offered things, like you might look at everything I've just shared with you, Greg, like I don't want you to feel jealous, but it was my job to go and be interested in it. I could be wearing, designer clothes, sipping some sort of, you know, adult beverage and playing golf and not paying attention to any of it. Because there's people I went to school with that did that, you know.
I was going to ask, what happened to your classmates?
Oh, they're all over the place. There are really good people, though, I have to say. There's all kinds of, there's other authors and
well, I can't imagine
actors.
This meditation exercise
some, you know,
messes
actors.
You up. You know, how could it? I feel that that would be an amazing thing in every public school. They should teach kids meditation. That would.
I love that you said that. I love that. That is exactly my mission, Greg. That is my mission. This is what I'm working on with Vidara. Vidara came and found me back at the beginning of this year, 2021. And they said, well, you know, we want to promote you as an astrologer. And I listened to what they were thinking about. They're the ones who create and publish My Indigo Sun. And they said, and we've got this magazine and, you know, we want to promote you. And I was like, I have a bigger idea. And they said, really? I said, yeah, I've done that. I've been an astrologer. I wrote for newspapers. I've been on TV. Let's do something bigger that's going to really help people. And so what I'm creating with all of this knowledge of how to launch into meditation is how to bring this to all levels of corporate, from white collar to blue collar, you know, from the CEO to the janitor, from, you know, the secretarial pools and the accounting departments. Methods so teams, you know, satellite teams can really entrain. Because, and some of this comes from being a musician, being a drummer, you know, and thinking about this, you know, maybe this is why, because now, look, I'm in my 60s. I'm a sexagenarian. That's why I did a lot of stuff, everybody, but I didn't get stuck on one thing, you know, and it's all starting to make sense. You know, it's all coming together. Well, you could look at me and say, whoa, late bloomer. But hey, I had to gather a lot of moss on this stone before I could get rolling.
That's interesting.
At this level.
Was there a period of time where you dropped it for a little bit? Were you ever just
meditation?
Hey, you know?
I can't say that, no, because I get into, like, drumming is very meditative.
I was going to say even mysticism, where you just going, you know what? I'm a rock star for this period of time. Forget all that. I'm going to live this life. I'm going to be a musician.
No, because I got my first yoga certification at 17. Well, at 18, because we had to be 18. But they let me in the course when I was 17 because I was turning 18 by graduation of the course. And I started teaching yoga, but I always was focused more on meditation. So it just was always in my awareness that, hey, this is what I like teaching. I've taught over 19,000 people. It's probably getting up towards 20 because I teach sometimes just by a little bit by talking on these interviews and podcasts. I count that, you know, those are more people I'm touching with some of this, maybe sparking some interest or, you know, maybe you come and you learn from me. Maybe you come to a workshop with me and I get asked to do this kind of leadership of meditation for other people's workshops. So other speakers that want to relax people, you know, on the first night. I do weekend workshops a lot virtually, where on Friday night I have the, you know, I have the last shift where I do a soothing guided meditation, which is hypnotic and puts people to sleep. I mean, the last time I did this, Greg, it was on Zoom. And I don't know how they did it, but they looked like they smashed against their cameras. They were like, you know, they were out and gone. And I just kind of disappear and leave. And when they're good, I put some of those on my guided meditation podcast. So you can go, you know, fall asleep.
Yeah,
well,
hey, we can. We're going to link to that. Everybody can
sure.
check it out.
And it's where were we headed with that?
I don't even know. I was asking about your rock star years. Well, I'm going. Right. It was Ambika in her 20s and 30s doing something radically different than.
Oh yeah.
Right now.
Oh yeah. I went to art school. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts. I taught art. I taught junior high and high school art at a small school. It wasn't Quaker. It was a very cool little private school. I actually ended up graduating from there. And so it was kind of a welcome back Ambika situation. And I taught there for a couple of years teaching visual art. And I was a potter. I made pottery. I made sculpture. I did all kinds of stuff out of clay, not just functional ware, but art and sculpture. And that's very meditative, working with clay. Yeah. So I would say everything beadwork. I did a lot of beadwork. You can't get more into meditation than doing beadwork.
Let me
I
ask
still
you
do
this.
It. Actually, yeah. I mean, I still have have some.
Oh, let's see here. Yeah, no, you're very artistic. I mean, it's art is coursing through you no matter what, which is I love. I mean, I sometimes wonder what would a corporate shaman look like? I mean, I'm
Well, I've done that. I mean, I've done trainings. I did one for I was wearing probably one of my wildest, bright, vibrant kind of patchwork from Tibet, kind of a sweatshirt. You've probably seen them. They're pretty popular now, but super bright colors and different patches. And I was sitting at a Japanese restaurant having lunch. This was years and years ago. And it was very small. You know, a very small restaurant. So my little table for two that I was at by myself, I had, you know, like my little bit of stuff was taking up the whole table. And there was a guy next to me, and we made eye contact a couple times, and we're kind of eating at the same pace. You know, I sat down a little after him, but we finished around the same time, and he struck up a conversation with me as we were having another round of tea. And he asked me about what I do, and he picked up on the, you know, creativity. And I started talking to him about meditation and research and meditation. And he said that he was looking for people like me to lead an in-service for a big medical company because they were going to lean management. And he was finding that his managers were encountering all kinds of weird communication and fear in the workers. And I went in there. You know, they paid my way, you know, hotel room, we conference room, the whole deal, meals. And I made what I called like ashram for a day. So these managers were in a completely different place. And I showed them throughout that day, because it was just a one day training, but you know, took me longer for travel. And I showed them in that day three completely different ways to center and meditate and have the experience, including a guided meditation, you know, and everybody liked different things, which was beautiful. You know, I gave them a smorgasbord and it worked. And at lunch, I wouldn't let them talk. It was a completely silent lunch, which is really common at an ashram. It's not talking during a meal, so you can chew and really focus on eating and nourishing your body. And we had an NLP kind of part of the day where we talked about communication and words and the throat chakra and the energy of what we're saying and how that goes back into our ears and you know, what's happening, what are the reactions and how to work with it. I still hear from them every once in a while on LinkedIn
I
from
was going to
people that
say,
were
were they
there.
with you? Do you believe? I believe I'm with you. I think there is a.
Well, this is what I want to do. I want to develop programs, and that's what I'm doing with Vidara. So I'm
Yeah.
speaking about it, and we're working on developing the curriculum. I mean, I have tons of curriculum. It's just a matter of what will work to heal the market that's craving it.
I think it's in people. I think people want this. I really do. I What's tricky, of course, and I'm sure you maybe you haven't encountered this. Maybe this is the magic with a K of Ambika that you've managed to go past a lot of people's defenses. What I was going to say is that I think, especially in America, there's a wellness movement. I've seen it more and more. I know it from being in offices. I know that there is a Oh, you know, let's have a meditate. We're gonna bring someone in who's a meditation expert, do a day-long workshop, and then back to your desks, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. So
And
what I want to do, Greg, is I want to teach them how to lead it. So
See, now
yes, I
that takes
will
it to
lead
the next
it,
level.
but I want leaders. I want to create leaders who lead it. So if it's a kindergarten, hey, we'll train the teacher and the teacher will train the kids and the kids will take turns leading.
Yeah.
Everybody learns how to be a leader of it.
See, now that takes it to the next level. And do you think people are in your experience? I mean, that sounds something that a corporate environment would go. They go, yeah, of course we want leaders. So it mixes with their needs as a business, but also you're bringing in the mystical, the spiritual, which is the thing that's a little less tangible, I think, sometimes for Forbes magazine. It's a little, you know, ethereal in a way.
Can you imagine, though, like, let me use a classroom again as an example. But can you imagine if the teacher who was giving you even like the SATs, you know, or a bar exam, if they were trained and it was normal for them to, you know, hand out, everything's out, the booklets are on the desks, you know, and instead of saying, okay, looking at their watch and, you know, counting you off and turn it over now, and then just sitting there the whole time, what if they started it off with, let's just shake out for a minute, you know, let's just bounce on our feet. Let's just shake our bodies out, whatever they need to do, make sounds. And then let's just sit down and close our eyes and imagine doing a really amazing job on this.
Yeah.
Now let's exhale. Now let's all take a deep breath in together. And exhale. And now on this next breath, let's take a deeper breath in and then pause. And as we exhale, slowly, slowly, let's get ready to pick up the book and the pencil, seeing that all the answers come clearly to us and that we're doing even more and better than we imagined we ever could. Can you imagine if we started like that?
You just took me out of trance. Hey, everybody listening, if there's something in your life where some project, something you're nervous about, some big thing, re-listen to that. That'll help you. No, that was good. You know, I'm absolutely with you there. I'm absolutely with you.
So can you imagine board meetings like that, Greg? Can you imagine coming back from recess or lunch and just getting centered and grounded with the group? Can you imagine, instead of just like chaos happening, trying to get people wrangled into seats for anything, any good convention or is going to have a good MC that can do something that can pull the group together. But what if this became habitual for all of us?
That would be an amazing world.
Mm. Root chakra, Greg.
Now,
I can't help it, you started me there.
Root chakra. I can't tell, are you fixing me through this podcast, or are we fixing the world, or is it all, am I the channel and everyone is one and the same?
Yes.
See, that's another mystical cryptic answer. I love it. Okay, so wait a minute, here's what I need to ask you next. Magic.
Okay.
I know you're a meditation expert. Where, but you also help people unlock this magic with a K. Now, I'm sure you
have it's a CK. Well, it's magique if you're spelling it in some European languages with a K, but it's, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's good. There's a K there.
Well, what I'm curious about is, where does meditation, because look, I think, And I think there are a lot of spiritual teachings. I mean,
meditation is completely mystical. I asked,
it meet magic? Well, why does tarot have to get into it? Why okay. crystals? Oh, why astrology? Bridge the gap for me, please. Okay. I'm curious.
So I'm an astrologer. I teach astrology. I teach tarot. I teach divination, basic divination and advanced divination. And any great astrology teacher or teacher of this is going to tell you that you absolutely must slow down and contemplate. I know a lot of people say, well, I get messages from spirit and things drop in, but can you prove to me that you're not communicating with the ego mind? Can you be sure that you are completely the observer and that information is coming in pure intuition? I still study Bhagavad Gita with Janeshwari Chaitanya at Shivananda Ashram. She's based out of the Bahamas campus. And Swamiji there, Swami Swarupananda, I can ask her to ask him questions for me. So I can get to the Swami sometimes, you know, because
what is the Swami doing? Is the Swami still around?
Well, he's Swami of that. There are Swamis at different campuses. There's many Swamis.
Is this a Swami that is, I'm imagining this person sitting there, open eyes.
He's like the head honcho at the Bahamas campus of Shivananda Ashram.
Is he on the edge of self-combustion?
You'd have to ask him. I don't feel comfortable answering that.
but when you have to go to somebody to speak to him, I guess.
Well,
he's
the top dog. I mean, you go ask him questions. Yes, he's up there.
You can't get access to him. I guess I'm trying to paint the
picture.
Well,
yes, if I was there in person, I could walk up to him and ask him a question. Okay, would be audiences and times where he would be there in a satsang and we can get the mic and ask a question. Yes, of course.
Okay. Because there's some that wouldn't be able to speak, right? There's some that are up there and are just...
There was a Thanksgiving. Well, yeah, but he's not in seclusion. He's not.
Right.
He's teaching. And so at Thanksgiving time, there was, it was either Thanksgiving or New Year's, one of the holidays a few months back. There was a time where we could ask our Bhagavad Gita teacher said we can ask our question to ask Swamiji. And I said, yes. Actually, one of my classmates asked, what's intuition? I was like, oh, this is great. That's even better than what I was going to come up with. So I was like, yes, that one. Let's ask.
Yeah,
Swamiji,
yeah.
What's intuition? And his answer was so beautiful that I made a meme of it and quote him all the time, which is meditation is the ladder that must be climbed in order to reach intuition. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Beautiful thing.
Because if you're really channeling, then there's no ego mind connection. You're gone. You're out of it. You're just witnessing it. And I wonder, sure, look, with astrology, there's numerology involved. There's angles, there's geometry, there's calculus, there's mythology. There's a lot of stuff we can intellectualize. But when you back up and look at a chart that looks like a bunch of bird dropping on a page, you know, you've got to interconnect it all. You can't just look at one thing and say, because the moon's in Leo, it's blah, blah, blah. No. But what about the whole rest of the chart? What about the angles happening to the moon from other planets? And how does that affect me? That takes a lot more contemplation. So I truly believe, so it was me who started this, Greg. You can blame this on me. I came to the wizard school to rewrite their astrology course. And then they said, hey, would you like to try teaching a class? And I said, sure. And I said, I'd like to rewrite this class because I think I can make it a whole lot better because I used to write curriculum for colleges, you know, and you know, at university level. And they said, sure, you know, give it a shot. And I've written and published tons. And so they asked me, do you want a department? And I had taught holistic health. So they wanted to give me the health, the healing department. I said, no, thank you. If I wanted that, I'd still be doing what I was doing. And they said, well, what would you want? And I said, well, do you have a metaphysics department? I said, no, we actually did it one time, but we took it apart. Now we have alchemy and we have psychic arts and divination and, cosmology. And I said, oh, that's kind of cool that you did that. You were able to, you know, satellite those out into their own departments. And I said, well, how about divination? I said, no way, you can't have that. So the person who had it at the time was really into it. And I said, psychic arts. And psychic arts didn't have very much in it. You know, it had some really good classes, but the major just didn't have the full strength that I would have liked to have seen. And it didn't have enough options to wiggle, you know, of like, maybe I like this stuff or this path. And I proposed, I want to write a major on the topic of meditation in the psychic arts department. And the note that I was writing to an apprentice when we first connected before the show today, Greg, that's somebody who just finished my fifth level course. That's my first apprentice to finish that fifth level course that I published.
Wow.
How cool is that? It's super cool. Yeah. I published these 7 courses. So she's got, well, 6, there's 2 at the first level. So she's actually done 6 classes already. Yeah. The 7th level is a practicum. They have to write a paper. They have to do their own research. So she's getting into my top level class, which is about manifestation, which I am super excited to have somebody go through it for the first time. Don't worry, everybody. I'm taking all the juicy parts from that, and that's going to be another book in the future. But if you need to know it now, come to Gray School of Wizardry. Get in.
What is this? Is it an in-person school you go to? Is it an online course?
No, it's online. It's online. And
Gray School of Wizardry.
Mm-hmm. .com. Yeah. Gray School. Spelled G-R-E-Y. Gray School.
Who's Gray?
Gray, our headmaster is Oberon Zell Ravenheart, very well-known wizard.
What? See, this is, okay, again, I got to sort this out here because I still don't fully understand how you can go from Quaker meditation and be so deep into Eastern philosophy, but then all of a sudden bring in this occultic Western hermetic influence as well.
Oh, yes, but you see, Gray School embraces all directions. I'm the one bringing the Far East.
But you teach tarot, you do astrology.
Well, yeah, I've been reading tarot since I was a little kid, but that's from another lifetime. I mean, I opened up the tarot and I knew what they were. Yeah. So.
Oh, what? You knew what they were from another lifetime? Wait, tell
Most
me that
definitely.
Story.
My mom. Oh, okay. So my mom used to take me on creative dates when I was a little kid. Yeah. She was like, did you ever read The Artist's Way?
Yeah.
For those
yeah.
of you. Yeah. So she was just naturally like that. You know, she loved books. And so we would have these creative dates where we would go to a museum, or we'd go to the ballet, or we'd go to the orchestra. We'd go to the bookstore once a week. And I went, you know, as a little tiny kid, I went to the little kids' room and people read stories to me. But once a month, even starting when I was little, I was allowed to choose one book that she would buy and could be mine, that I could take home. And so one day, It was the day I could pick a book, and I wandered out of the little kids area and to the back of the store of, you know, the regular big people's store. And I went to the back shelf and I went straight to the back shelf. And I remember seeing a shiny cellophane. They didn't have shrink wrap back then. Cellophane wrapped black box. And I pulled it off the shelf and it had a picture of a tarot card on it. And it was a box and a book. It was a box set, you know, of the deck and a book. And I brought it to my mom and I said, this is what I want. And she looked at it and she thought, she realized I got it from, you know, not the kids section. And she went and put it back and took me back to the kids section. And I went back to the back of the store, pulled it off. And we tried again, tried putting me back to the little kids section, you know, green carpet, the big fig tree sculpture. And yeah. I went back to the back of the store and she followed me again, watched me again, squatted down and held it and said, is this what you really, really want? And I said, yes, mama, this is what I really want. And she looked at it and it had a book. That was the deal. Had to be a book. Couldn't be a toy. And she bought it for me. She said, we went home and we usually went to the park after, and then we went home and she peeked in my door and watched. She said, I went in, I unwrapped it. I took the book out. I fanned through the book, put the book on the shelf, unwrapped the cards, spread them out, and just started, she said, playing with them. But I was looking at them, you know, I was, they were like, talk about download or upload, you know,
yeah.
Just made sense. And I figured, you know, I read the book and it just all made sense.
You really are a melding of both worlds.
But I did study it, everybody. I studied with Vicki Noble, and I've learned from some really great ones. Vicki was one of the originators of the Mother Peace Tarot deck.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. See, now
we've had great teachers. But again, Greg, you know, it's they say, the yogis say that you know, when you paid your dues, you land in an area where you'll be able to hook into things, but it's up to you to hook to them. So yes, through meditation, I think you become more aware, and you learn quickly how to work smarter and not harder.
Do you see, there's some interesting trends. I wonder sometimes, because look, when I went into your website, I'm going, wow, Ambika, she's got it all going on. She's got the crystals, the tarot, the meditation. You do a lot of different disciplines. Sometimes I feel that I see people that will just buy a bunch of crystals, maybe buy one book on tarot, call themselves a witch. I mean, I'm always making fun of the Brooklyn witches, but people that maybe don't have the root chakra mastered, but they do have an interest in all this other stuff, and they get all new agey mystical. What do you make of that trend? It's almost, there's a lot of this stuff that has become popularized, and it's easier to buy gemstones than it ever was.
Oh, and I wish people would really look at, where are they coming from? How are they being mined? Is it good for the planet that it's coming from there? Is this a good company? You know,
yeah, you bring the grounding to it.
Just with Himalayan salt, there are entire mountains that are no longer there anymore, people. Think about that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, what is the right way to,
you know, and Palo Santo is something that people like to burn, you know, like sage and cedar and Palo Santo. Please, if you're using Palo Santo wood, please make sure it's ethically farmed. Please, because it's endangered.
Yeah. Are you, look, I know it's not your role to police the spiritual community, but...
Oh, heck no, I don't want that job.
No, there's some people out there that
are
very...
Hard pass.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely... Something about that root chakra thing, though, it does seem that some people go off, and it almost becomes, almost becomes more of an accessory than me believing that they're tapped into something. Now, this is coming from someone that, well, probably denies how tapped in I am more than I should, though I'm not sure what you're picking up on, Ambika.
Oh,
but...
I told you right in the beginning that you get me. I think you are very tapped in.
I appreciate
that. I think you are very grounded and centered, Greg. At least you were this evening when we met. And that could be because the astrology is good for both of us. You know, we're kind of in the groove. And
I think you have a natural energy too.
Yeah. I mean, it could be me. I don't know.
One time I went on a date with someone who is very into this. And I said to her, I feel very creative. Stuff is just coming out of me. And she goes, yes. You're in theta. That's what happens when you're around.
No, if you're in
people around me.
Wait, theta, huh? Well, theta, you'd be like, you'd be gone.
Would I be gone?
Like, or... Well, and it's also, I want you to understand about brainwaves. They're all firing at all times. It's not like just one.
Oh, like one, you think people get
forward.
That wrong too? Yeah.
Oh,
what's going on with that?
Because it's like they're all moving at the same time, but certain ones are more dominant.
Right.
So it's good to use the word dominant. Theta dominant makes
theta
more sense.
Theta dominant.
So you're a little more theta dominant, because if you were in full on theta, you'd be snow in between channels on a TV.
Where do you think most people are?
At any given time, they could be just about anywhere. I mean, the trance moment the potential trance moment fires about every 90 seconds. This is why hypnotherapists can be successful, because we can talk to you and catch you and drag you in.
Yes.
You know, we look for things. You know, a good hypnotherapist watches and senses through all their senses with a client. Now, if you're doing it in a recording studio, you know, you're visualizing it so that you can pull in the listener. But really, skilled sessions going to be at least visual, so that the hypnotherapists can watch their client because we look for signs in the skin. Now, that's a secret weapon as a leader of guided meditation, don't you think?
Yes. Oh, I mean,
not so
yeah.
secret anymore.
No, wait, that's what we, hey, look, but hey, and I think you know this too, when you're teaching this stuff to people, you can tell them what you're doing and it still works. It just still works.
Oh, that, my hypnotherapy teacher blew our minds. He would say, that's right. And we would just get pinned to the furniture. We couldn't move. I mean, he could easily have done stage hypnotherapy stuff to us because he was just so good.
Who was he? Was he a well-known name in the community?
Well, he's not living anymore. And there was
he in Arizona? Because I know that's where
Milton
Erickson. No, no,
I met him and he actually studied in that lineage. Yes.
Okay. Because I was going to go, Milton's favorite.
It was definitely Ericksonian. He was a devout follower of Erickson. And so he was my first NLP teacher and taught me hypnotherapy. And then later I first learned about yoga nidra from the Amrit Yoga Institute. And I've known him since I was 6 years old. So I met that yogi Amrit Desai, his followers call him Gurudev, which, you know, beloved teacher. That's what that means. And he started a yoga nidra teacher training. And when I got my master's degree, I actually had to take a yoga teacher course from his place because of the university where I got my master's in yoga was sent me there. Even though I had thousands and thousands of hours and other fully completed certifications from other lineages, but
For the
masters, yeah. I don't get tired of school, I guess, you know.
Well, yeah, I like it.
Too. I've had great teachers. I've learned. So his daughter, Kamini Desai, and she's, you know, like the Devi of, meaning goddess Devi of yoga nidra. And she has yoga nidra recordings. Airlines have it, you know, you're up in the air, you plug in, it's like guided meditation. It's her, you know. So she taught me yoga nidra and, I have definitely created my own kind of style by also knowing Marissa Peer and being in a lot of Marissa Peer, who is amazing, everybody. And if you don't think you're enough, then right now I want you to write down, I'm enough, and go find Marissa Peer's I Am Enough speech for Mind Valley. It is, I've seen it change my clients. In one
wow,
viewing.
I need to watch more of her stuff. I mean, I know she's very popular.
Particular, yeah, she's amazing. And I adore her style. So I've learned from these great teachers and I've made my own little.
Oh, it's amazing that you're open to learning still. I mean, I think
and experimenting. Like
really
in
the sign of a master.
When it comes to sleep, which, you know,
I was going to ask next about. Yeah. Oh my gosh, you got there before I did, which also tells me how tapped in we're both right now because I'm actually looking. I'm on your website and going, we got to talk about sleep envy too because this seems fascinating. And then of course you managed to go right into it, which is just interesting.
So do you think I should be the dean of psychic arts?
Yeah. No, wait a minute. So and sleep envy. Yeah, what is sleep envy is an interesting term too.
Okay, so I have to admit, I was in a I had been bugging my teacher Eric Edmeads. He's a mentor of mine. Yeah, and I was devoutly studying speaking and marketing and all kinds of stuff from him. Business practices. He's an amazing teacher. And I was taking a course. I had bugged him to make this course for 2 years of, you know, Eric, you know, you made Wild Fit and that's an amazing video course. How the heck do you get people to do it for 90 days? A video course? Like, right. Seriously, I want to learn how you did that, you know, and other people did too. So he did teach us. We got to take a product creation course from him and really learn the techniques. But then I had to teach myself about video and video editing and all kinds of stuff to make it happen. Audio, I've got. I was a musician. I worked in music. I worked in music studios. I get audio, but video is a bigger learning curve, as everybody knows who gets into it. And I was in the course and I thought, ooh, I'm going to make, you know, this great meditation course, and it's going to have grounding and centering and all this stuff I teach at the Wizard School. And my teachers in the course said, wait a minute, too much. That's, you know, I'm building a college course. You're trying to build one video class, you
right.
know? A multi-section video class. And I was getting really frustrated because other people came in really knowing what they were doing. They knew what their course was going to be. And I had too many ideas. And I had sticky notes everywhere. And I don't really, at that point, I wasn't even comfortable with the whole sticky note, you know, mapping out process. And so I begged a couple of the mentors to spend some outside of class time with me, so that they could help me, because I was having a meltdown. I didn't know what I was going to build, which for a creative person is not a good place to be.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I can meltdown too, you know? And so they're asking me questions, and I'm like, well, you know, I've got, you know, what do you have and how do you teach meditation and what have you got out there that's already free content? And I mentioned the podcast, Meditate with Ambika. And they said, great, what's your most popular track on there? I said, well, it's this one about dream. It's for dreamers. And in it, I kind of hypnotically get people to go to sleep. And then I make suggestions so that they have remembrance and very clear, and if they want, lucid dreams, and they wake up and they remember them. And I get great feedback on it. They said, oh, really? Can you help people sleep? And I said, oh, yeah. And they said, that's your course. So then I had to name it, and I was up very late that night Googling all kinds of sleep courses, looking, you know, what's the competition doing? What's everybody calling it? How are they marketing it? Because this was all about not just creating it, but how are you going to market it when you've got it, you know?
Yeah.
And or a little bit of that. It was really mostly about creating it, but creating it with that in mind, so you're clever. And I came across, so I was looking up quotes, you know, famous quotes about insomnia. And I found something about being envious of sleep. And I thought that's how I came up with it. End sleep envy. Not so easy to say really fast in English, but I named it End Sleep Envy. And the subtitle is Stop Telling 2 a.m. Your Secrets. And the reason I chose that is because as I interviewed insomniacs, because that was part of it, I had to find people who were hurting to find out what they wanted and what they would invest in doing it. And I said, you know, what's hard for you? Most people were telling me, some just can't get to sleep. They're just full on insomniacs. But many, many people, they'll go to sleep, they'll sleep deeply, and then they'll wake up between 2 and 5 a.m. and they can't sleep. And then that creates all different kinds of sub things that happen about how they deal with it. Mm. And I thought, oh, okay. So I know I'm a super light sleeper. In over the years, I have had to develop certain habits and changes in my environments in order to sleep well. And I have gone out and researched things to try and tried them out. So I've tried things that didn't work for me, but I know work for other people. And then I've tried things that do work for me. So I wanted to involve all of those, especially the things that work for me in the course, because I understand this is super personal. Everybody has different challenges. And then when it came to the guided meditations, I made a different one for every day. It's a 7-day course, and there's bonus tracks also. And I made them audio so that you can download them, so you can unplug and turn all of your equipment off near your bed, and you can truly not be disturbed. And so I teach habits and, yeah, and different things. And there are distinct differences of these tracks, of these guided meditations that will take you into deep sleep. And I teach breathing exercises, a different one every day, easy ones, but ones that you can do laying in your bed, you know, lying there in the dark. And it's not going to take a lot of energy and a lot of thought. And, you know, once you learn it a few times from me, you'll get it. but different things I use. I wake up and use them, but I know there's other ones that work. So again, and different people tell me this one works for me. I don't really like that one. These two meditations work really well for me, but these other ones, well, that's how I built it, because yeah, it's not going, you know, I had to create a little smorgasbord so people could, but some people do like them. And I'll tell you, there were two that I recorded of these guided meditations that I had the hardest time editing because I kept falling asleep. I kept falling asleep listening to, I'd be like conked out in my computer chair, and I'd be like, no, fortunately I have a waterproof keyboard, you know, so if I drool.
Yes, but I love it.
I mean, I would be editing and I get to a certain place and it was really hard to get through those two. It took me days, whereas the other ones were easy. So that just showed me, wow, those two worked for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, a couple things. One is, everybody listening to this, this course, I've seen a lot of online courses out there that people would easily, and look, I mean, maybe I'm giving something away by saying this, but easily people would charge triple the amount of money for this. This is a very reasonable offer for a course with this much in it. And think about everything of this conversation. You talk about one thing, Ambika, it leads to another thing. This isn't just for sleeping. There's stuff in here. I mean, I'm looking over the contents of this course. This is stuff that's going to help you with any meditation practice, any sense of connecting to your spirituality. I mean, there's just a lot that you've packed in here that I think will help with insomnia, but also is just going to help you when it comes to this getting those flashes of awakening in general.
Absolutely.
I highly recommend, if you want to do a deep dive into this sort of thing, check out End Sleep Envy. We will link to that in the show notes.
Cool. Do you want to offer something to your listeners, Greg?
Yeah, sure. What can we do for Open Loops fans out there?
You were so kind to say that you felt that it was reasonable. What if I offered everybody 50% off?
What? Wait, that's actually very
seriously
wild.
That's
really
that. Yeah, I want to give you guys 50% off. So use Ambika, my name, helps me sleep, all lowercase.
Ambika helps me sleep. You heard it here. Yeah, that's so
generous.
Just
use it as a coupon at checkout and it's yours for life. If I move it, if I change it, if I upgrade it, you'll always have access to it.
I love that. I love it. And of course, you still do coaching. I mean, you do everything. I don't
know
how you have the time.
I mean, I'll make custom for you if you want. I'll make sure you fall asleep against the camera.
I know. You must have you really do have a busy schedule. It is
sometimes I, you know, okay. So today, yesterday felt kind of busy, but it was because I had ordered a gift for a friend, and it said it was delivered, and he never got it, and I had to contact the company and, you know, do all that. That took a big chunk of the day. That could have stressed me out heavily, but, you know, I spent some time in nature. It's hot here in Florida. I have a swimming pool, so that's my happy place. I spend a few hours there every day if I can, unless it's pouring rain. And I take time. One thing that Eric Edmeads has really taught me is about time. You know, in his business management course, he teaches people to take Fridays off, to begin to take Fridays off and have a 4-day work week. And there are corporate disruptors that I made friends with, you know, as a result of taking classes with him. And I love what they're doing and what they're talking about now. And I thought, well, you know, I can push myself really hard. I work for me, you know, I'm not punching a clock. I could work 7 days a week. And I thought, why am I not taking more time off for me? You know?
Yeah.
And it really kind of woke me up on that, because I thought, wow, am I really spending every moment I'm working, or am I getting sidetracked with, you know, social media and things like that? And then what if I really am happy outside in the pool, in the sun, in the summertime, and I've learned how to do social media on my phone, why not go outside and be in the pool and do it? You know, so just to get a lot smarter about how I'm handling things and getting things done and where, and if I really have said to myself, okay, on this day I'm off, I will even turn the computer off. I won't go near it. So we have to learn to set these boundaries. We have to ask ourselves, you know, what are we running towards or from, and why are we pushing ourselves so hard? Because if we give ourselves more space, and this has been proven in other countries and in different business models of even a 3-day work week, you know, and I can't tell you how many of my clients last year were so happy to be telecommuting, you know, and then all of these festivals went virtual, right? I mean, I don't know that Burning Man did, but
yeah, all the summits, all the old spiritual conventions. Yeah, they all.
So now a lot of them, because of what's going on, they're starting up again. You know, they're smaller, but these people were just so in a mad rush to get in physical contact with each other. And I don't even want to get into my views on that right now, Greg. So I'm just going to tell you that if you're listening to this in the future, everybody, there's a pandemic going on right now here and on Earth. And so, you know, they raced to go get there. And I was talking to Oberon today because he was just at a series of festivals. And I said, were they hybrid? Were they videotaping? And he said, no. And I thought, why? Didn't you learn anything last year, people? You can invite so many more people to your events if you'll go hybrid.
That's true. I like that you're embracing the, you know, you respect the sacred and you know, the traditional, but also Ambika, you live in 2021 and you accept that there are other ways of getting this knowledge out there.
I think it's so important, you know. There's so many people that have so much to offer and so much to give. And I feel like this should be the trend, the work model, the education model that we are still functioning with here in the United States, where you and I are living, Greg, was developed in Roosevelt's time. You know, have we really transformed much? So, all these speakers, you know, want to get on big stages, want to have giant crowds, you know, of course I want that. Of course I want that, but I don't want to put myself in jeopardy. And I also really wanted to figure out how to go digital. So I kind of wished it, you know, I wanted some focus time on how to get digital, and I'm fine staying here for now. I'm not taking any in-person gigs at this time. Everything's virtual. So if you don't want to beam me in, hey, thank you very much. I'll see you when things shift again.
Yeah. And actually, even on your YouTube channel, you have a video about zooming like a Jedi, which that's a whole nother
okay,
level.
Okay, let me tell you how I made that. When the pandemic lockdown first happened in 2020, I was with Eric. That was my last international travel. I was at a speaker's academy, an advanced level speaker academy in the Dominican Republic with Eric Edmeads and 14 of my favorite co-students that I know from his organization. And it came back and we got locked down and everything, you know, changed. And we had to figure it out, you know, we had to figure out what we were doing, but that was like this launch point for me. You know, I was like, yes, now I can focus on figuring out how to edit video and do this. And I can help people because I already knew how to Zoom. I can help people and I can make it more comfortable for them. And I was in a Toastmasters club at the time. And I said to them, people, we need to go virtual now. And I actually argued with them And I refused to go in person. This was before the formal lockdown happened. And I started, I did it with my own personal Zoom account, and I got our club going. And there were people that were afraid. They were afraid to be on Zoom. You know, people are afraid of technology. I get that. So I said, you know what? I'm going to make, I'll do a live class and I'll videotape it. And then I'll post it on my YouTube channel and people can go and learn, you know, just some basic Zooming. So, and then I also, a friend of mine's a Girl Scout leader and has a daughter in Girl Scouts. And I was supposed to teach origami to the Girl Scouts. And I said, no worries, we'll do it on Zoom. And it was great. And I put the origami class on my YouTube channel too.
Yeah. You give away a lot. It's pretty, you're very generosity.
Oh, thank you. That, you know, again, I have to bow. I've always been a generous person.
Yeah.
I have to bow to my mama on the first, because my mama taught me that if somebody comes to you, you always offer them something to drink and something to eat. And I figure, well, if it's teaching or something virtual, then I have to give you some good stuff to chew on, you know, that for your body, mind, and spirit. And I notice that I do it with clients. Sometimes I exhaust my clients because we're over time and I still want to make sure I'm just not getting that sense of like, you got your fill. I want you to push away from a session with me and go, oh, that's enough. Okay. You gave me more than enough. I am filled. And then with first time clients, I always give them a 15 minute follow-up for astrology clients, because they'll have questions an hour later. And I say, you know, wait 2 weeks and gather your questions. And I give you a 15 minute follow-up, because I know it, I just know people's nature from so many years of working with it.
Yeah. Wow. I feel that this was a taster interview of Ambika Devi. I mean, really, this is so much interesting stuff. And again, everybody, what is that code on your course?
Oh, the secret code is, yes, Ambika helps me sleep, all lowercase.
Ambika helps me sleep. And if you do decide to spontaneously combust, where can we see that? Will you put that on YouTube?
I'd rather you didn't publicize that on YouTube.
Well, if you spontaneously, I don't know how I'm going to know.
Are you asking me about, what are you asking me about?
I was asking if one day you are going to combust spontaneously.
Oh, I don't know, because, you know, there's different ways out. I, of course, would like to leave less of a mess for people to clean up.
Okay.
I did find out recently, I don't know if you found this out, that in Maine, in the USA, it is now legal to have a Viking burial. So, you know, you can have like a barge built and a flaming barge out into the ocean. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh my gosh. I know
I'll
that.
I'll probably go low key, you know, just burn it and scatter it. You know, it's like, I don't know. I've written a will. So, and I've asked people who are younger than me to be responsible.
No, we got to keep you around. We got to, no spontaneous combustion.
Oh, no,
for you.
No, I don't think I'm leaving just yet, but
stick around.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that probably takes a lot of work, being able to do that. I don't think you just luck into it, but I did mention Spinal Tap. So if you haven't seen that movie, you'll get my joke. especially because I'm a drummer, but I'm not giving the joke away any further.
I love it. Ambika Devi, this has been a fantastic whirlwind.
So much fun. This is the best end to my day ever.
Oh my gosh, I'm
so
glad.
What a cool podcast. You are so much fun, Greg. Can I come back? I want to come back.
Yes, absolutely.
That was
have
like
you back.
Too much fun. Let's like take a deep dive and stuff.
I know. I feel
let's, like,
that there is more.
One topic.
We gotta go
like
more.
Call in or something, you know?
Yeah, I'm down. I would absolutely love to have you back on, because thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
It'd be super fun. What a pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for listening all the way to the end.
Awesome. Ambika Devi. Thanks so much for leading me towards one day becoming some Eastern Estonian princess's wedding anniversary gift. I'll be one of those pearls. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank you for listening. Follow me at TheGregBornstein on Instagram. Send me your thoughts. Love to hear them. Take care, everybody.